Okay, so before I get started, one of my favorite things about recording editor's notes is single track audio. You get to hear the full effect of my lesser's voice. But there's a reason for this. I couldn't, with the adjusting audio levels, also put in the transition music. So in this episode, you're going to be hearing just our voices, just the podcast, just as we recorded it. Hope that's not a problem. Hope you guys aren't missing anything. I do apologize. I feel really bad. On with the episode.
Hello and welcome to the 12th episode of the 2-for-1 podcast brought to you by Anchor and In the Lane, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast. 12 episodes, Sean. We made it past 10. We made it.
And it's an even number, so I'm sure you like that, right?
I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world. I actually wanted to die last week or 2 weeks ago when we recorded 11.
I don't want to call anybody out, but yeah, I think you are the weirdest Heat-related content creator ever.
All right, there we go. There's a lot of people that we've had on this show, CEOs, CFOs of major companies, Jeff Bezos. That episode never made the light of day, but he was here. But today we have the most special guest that we've had since the podcast launched, Alex Toledo. Five on the floor and five years in sports. Man, welcome to In Lane. Welcome to 2-for-1.
What's up, man? It's good to be on. Definitely wasn't expecting that intro. Most special. Come on. It's probably the other way around.
What's up? We appreciate you being here, man. We're just going to jump right into some stuff with you. There has been a daily rumor mill of Tyler Hero trade talks, of what's happening with Duncan Robinson, of what's going on with the team. And the narrative is shifting back and forth, but between these constants, right? It's the same couple trades we talk about over and over and over again. When you think about some of these possibilities and how often we discuss them, where does your brain go? What are some of the things, the flashbulb moments that you think about?
Well, I don't know. I just think it's been a lot of, like, I'm not really surprised by it. I just think it's a lot of the Heat looking at their options. And I'm not surprised that they're interested in a lot of guys. They could use help from a lot of guys. Like, I was making that point on 5 on the 4 before I hopped on here. They just really can't afford to be too picky when it comes to the type of help they can use on their team, even though I'm always kind of speaking up for, you know, I think the priority should be the backcourt, the shot creation, and making sure they add somebody of a higher level there. I just think they got to make sure that they hit on whatever they do decide to do this offseason. And I'm not opposed to them being interested in everybody at all.
Yeah, I think it's them doing their job. I mean, they have to improve the team. Miami has a culture of always trying to strive for a championship level team. And, you know, there's some things that you can kind of read into. You know, I don't have sources. I mean, Tony doesn't have sources, but when you're reading into the Heat Twitter and...
Didn't you break the big three?
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah,
I used to
yeah
have, he did. So, you know, I'm like a modern-day Evan Massey, you know, just reporting stuff every day, breaking news.
The legend, Evan Massey.
We are connected to all 449 players except for Hassan Whiteside. He's the only guy we're not interested in anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, we have to find ways to improve our roster, and we have a lot of flexibility. So there's trades, there's free agency. There's a lot of things that Miami can do, and some of it's going to be complete BS, and some of it's going to be factual stuff that is going to come to light in a few weeks. So we're just filling the void at this point, I think, of you know, content coming out because nothing else is going on besides the Olympics and these last few games of the finals.
Until we get to the point where we are either picking up or declining the options of Andre Iguodala and Goran Dragic, I like really don't have any desire to talk trades because I don't even know how the team's going to operate. I don't know what they're going to do, what kind of moves they're going to make, and we can discuss every individual topic to death. But I don't know where you guys are at, but man, trade talk kills me when it can go in 97 different directions at one time.
Yeah, it's tough. It's like you never know. I mean, the Heat are always like, it feels like whatever type of deal they all, it's always something that you don't really see coming, right?
Or, right.
I don't know. Like, I just think talking about it is fun. It's always been fun. When I was writing for Heat, we would do the trade deadline articles every year, and I used to love doing those. It's just, it's been so long now, you know, I'm just kind of, I'm a little bit more neutral about it. I'm just like waiting to see what happens. It seems like there's a lot of options there. I do have trust in them to know, you know, what they're missing. It does seem like they know they need to get better in the backcourt. They need to get a little bit tougher in the front court as well. Man, I trust the Heat. I trust the Heat brass to address their holes and their, you know, the stuff that they need to get better at here.
Yeah, and we've seen that over the course of 25 years since Pat Riley came in 1995, that you can trust in this organization. The same guys are around that made great decisions over the course of time. And so I definitely believe in trusting that. So let's transition and talk about Tyler Hero. And beyond the rumors of trades and signings, his name seems to always be involved in something on social media, whether it's his personal life, whether it's trade rumors, whether it's his workouts or not his workouts and USA basketball. There's so much stuff going on with him. So, you know, let's just look over the last couple of weeks. You know, first starting with the Bam comments. Bam made some comments about his involvement with the USA Select team and how it would be good for him to watch other professionals and how they operate, how they do their craft. And it kind of got taken out of context in a way, I believe, of he was making a comment that was maybe sliding towards Tyler. What did you guys think about that? Was it overreaction or was it something that Bam was maybe trying to point out about Tyler's lifestyle and the way he's handling himself?
Well, like personally, it kind of feels like something a player would say in that situation when asked that question. Like Bam's comments sounded very Heat PR-y. But that's just where I was. It didn't seem like a slight at all. It just felt like the Heat.
It felt like the Heat. I mean, I made a joke about it in the Five on the Floor chat that like that was Bam telling Tyler to get in the weight room, but it was more tongue in cheek. I don't really believe that. I think that was Bam just trying, you know, getting his answer in and trying to get out of there. I don't really think he was trying to get a message across to Tyler.
All right. And then we also had the Black Sports Online report that him and his girlfriend had broken up after she was pregnant. There was something involved with cheating. This is where we're at in the offseason. I mean, we laugh about this, but this was like however many days ago, it was like the buzz on Heat Twitter. And then that night, he posted a video in the practice facility of the two of them shooting around. She had a good mid-range jump shot. She got rebounds. So she actually could help us potentially. She had the mid-range. She rebounds the ball. She looked physical. I mean, you know, so let's see if maybe she can sign for the mid-level or something. But, you know, this is where we're at, social media age of reporting on these athletes' lives. What did you think about that? I mean, to me, it's inappropriate, and it was something that probably required an apology, which never came out, but I just don't like it.
It's what BSO does, man. He's been doing this for so long now. I guess he's like, this is my corner, but it's more BS of it than anything, right? I just think that whole thing was insane. He got cold taped in like half a day. I think there's like a new record. So, you know, he broke a record there, making himself look bad. And I think the whole thing was kind of more than inappropriate. It was unfortunate. It's like you didn't even have your facts straight, right? It's just like an ugly situation because you know how people will take these things and go with it on social media, especially when it comes to Tyler, who's like probably the most controversial, the most polarizing figure when it comes to the Heat players right now, even though he's like a 21-year-old. So, yeah, I'm glad we moved on past that. I just think it was pretty ugly.
I'm less upset with BSO because he's tabloid Twitter, like, and we all understand that's what that is. And more upset with, again, the fans getting caught up in this. It's just so embarrassing that so many people are so invested in like what these guys do with their personal lives, as if getting to this point in their careers didn't require the utmost sacrifice and the utmost intelligence. Like the idea that any NBA player can get to the NBA and just make terrible, dumb decisions, like their whole existence, is crazy to me. And I'm sure Tyler and Katia have a good idea of how they're going to manage themselves and their relationships and their child. And people should just leave them to deal with their lives. But I'm exhausted this conversation. I feel like I have it once a day.
Exactly. So last but not least, let's talk about Tyler Hero playing basketball. That would be fun. recently, he's been working out with the Team USA Select team and has moved on now to some work with Drew Hanlon, who's famous for working out Jason Tatum, Bradley Beal, among many other players. And Drew Hanlon, one of the things he's famous for is he really focuses on one thing, not trying to add 16 things to his bag, but like one specific skill. And from what I've seen in the videos that have been posted, which obviously is a small piece of this workout, he might work out for 3 hours and you're watching a 20-second clip, but it really seems like they're focusing a lot on his handle and then pulling up, you know, one or two dribble pull-ups and counters off of that. What do you think, you know, talking about Drew Hanlon and Tyler Hero, what would be the one thing you'd like to see Tyler add to his game going into next season?
Oh, man, that is a really tough question. Oh, man. Well, I do like when you talk about the one dribble pull-ups. I just think Tyler, there was too many times this season where, even though I've said a lot, I think there was stuff that he got better at, just talking about his skill development, even though he was inconsistent as a shooter. I think there was a lot of times where he kind of had opportunities to take those quick one dribble pull-ups that were there, and he kind of takes a little bit too long, just kind of always looking for the pass, always looking to make the next play. And I don't know, I like when he gets into those more, just because when you're that type of guy, you don't have the physicality, the athleticism, and you do have those moments where you can take the one dribble pull-up. I think he's got to take it. So I think him kind of repping that's a great idea. But if I had to pick one thing for him to add to his game, I just think he needs to get better at what he's good at. That's kind of where I'm at with him, just because I want him to be the best version of himself before we think about adding stuff, just because I think his bag, you know, part of my usage of that here, is already pretty advanced for somebody of his age, and somebody who I think when he was taken at the time, a lot of us thought he was going to be just kind of this off-ball shooter more often than not, and he's capable clearly more than that. So whereas I feel like he's gotten better in the skill development, you know, over the past couple of years already, I would like to see him actually be consistent in the stuff that he's already good at when it comes to, you know, being an actual three-point shooter and being somebody who could take the open mid-range shot when it's there for him. Again, I just think he needs to be more decisive. And really, I'm more worried about his physicality, right? Like, I want him to come into the – and I don't know nothing about this, right? I'm not a trainer, but I just think physically he needs to come into the league. I mean, come into his third season a little bit bigger than he has in the past. I think he guys tend to just run right through him on defense, and whether it's on the point of attack or not, I just think he needs to get bigger. And if he wants to be an actual three-level scorer, you know, that includes getting to the rim. And I think he's a finesse player who likes to kind of go around guys who can finish with both hands, very skilled. But you still, like, you can't, you know, you got to put on a little bit of weight there, I think, with his physicality.
I think it's kind of hard to argue in any way that Tyler's base, his one dribble pull-up, shouldn't be the things he should work on, right? I mean, pretty universally, those are things that he can get to in his bag now, just not effectively and not consistently. And that first year, he would get to his floater from so many weird, crafty angles, and he was so much more willing to take a mid-range shot. And it kind of feels like some of that point guard like mentality that the Heat dug into him got him looking for the pass more often. It got him hunting for that three-point step back. I don't know how much of it is really on. I think Tyler should improve in the ways he wants to improve. I'm a little more concerned about the Heat switching his roles like they did so many times last year. One of the major things I want for him is consistency. He's a young cat. He needs to have a defined role, even if he's starting. He needs to know what he should do night in, night out going in to play a basketball game. So if he improves his mid-range shot, his job should be to score the fucking basketball. That's the only thing I want him doing. I don't want nothing else. It's the reason I want a consistent point guard here more than anything else in the world. So Tyler Hero has a clear defined role of scoring the ball when he's in the game. And I think he'll excel at that as long as he puts on some mass, because he also needs to get to the damn line, because there's only a few players in this team that can get to the line as it stands right now. He has to be able to finish through contact and put that ball into the rim. So, Sean, where are you at with Tyler?
Yeah, you know, I think, like Alex said, sharpening what he does. I think getting better with the handle, and I think strength will help that. Mm. You know, it makes it easier for him to protect the ball with his body. And right now, he's so small, and being 21, being young, you know, coming into the league, he doesn't have that advantage. So getting stronger in the weight room and just having a stronger handle, that's going to get him to his mid-range. It's going to get him into the paint. You know, and defense is going to come over time. I don't know if he's ever going to be an excellent defender, but the time he spent with USA Select, competing against the Olympic team, and then just continuing to play, you know, more and more minutes, and what's demanded in the Miami Heat culture is playing defense. So he may not be an all defensive team player. He's always going to have those shorter arms, but at the same time, if he just competes, If he's the weakest defender on the floor, I think you're okay as long as you have four other guys who can make up for those mistakes.
Yeah, and the one thing that Tyler can always do, I'll never discredit a player. Just because his intangibles aren't there doesn't mean he can't get to spots before offensive players get to their spots, that he can't read scouting reports, that he can't disrupt guys when they try to go to their favorite moves. I mean, there's things that Tyler can do to be good on defense. And you know who's really good on defense? The Miami Heat adjacent team, the COVID relief team, the rest management team, the Nigerian Heat. So you guys got to sit down, watch some USA basketball, right? Sean, what were some of your first impressions of watching this Nigerian team with Precious, Gabe, and KZ just go at Team USA?
Yeah, I mean, there's no negatives in the fact that these guys were showing out. They're playing bigger roles. Precious looked really good. KZ looked really good defensively, both of them, their athleticism, their length. KZ didn't show much on offense. I don't think he had any points against USA. But at the same time, he had great defense on Kevin Durant. He shut him down on that last possession. So, you know, when you're looking for – when we're talking about these guys, it's like crumbs. If you find a crumb of positiveness with them, I'm running with it. Like KZ Akpala, he used to be, you know, the baby Giannis and all that stuff, and that kind of faded away for a while. Now that he's defending Kevin Durant and locking him up a little bit, like, I'm right back into it. He's back on the list. Gabe Vincent, 6 threes against Team USA. I mean, he came into Miami as a shooter, and we didn't really see that. We saw more on-ball defense, and so it's good to see him show that. And I just like them playing with Mike Brown, you know, an NBA coach, a championship-level coach. And so, you know, it's all positive stuff with their experience coming back to the Miami Heat.
Look, you know, this is only positive. The stuff with Nigeria and the Heat players there, it's only positive. I love seeing these guys get so much playing time. It's literally like watching a Heat game out there, and just like this, it means a lot to them, obviously, because they're playing for their country. These guys are athletic as hell, are defending all over the place. They're actually pretty fun to watch. It's like this lovable underdog filled with a bunch of cool young players and Nepke Udoh. look, Precious is out there looking bigger and more athletic than he did before, I feel like. I think, look, just seeing KZ hit a couple set threes, I love it, man. I just think he needs to do a little bit more of that, because I think the defensive stuff is already there for him. I think even though he could sharpen it up a little bit, he has the defensive tools, I think, and already showed some of that last season and is showing that again now with Nigeria. And Gabe Vincent, hitting all those threes, like, yes, there's the shooter, right? There's the guy who you picked up who was supposed to be a shooter. You know that he competes on D. So it's definitely only positive so far. They're fun to watch. They're fun to root for just because, you know, nobody really saw this coming. And they've got three of our guys, of course. So I'm going to keep watching their games and, you know, just catching up to see what they're doing. It feels like it you know, we kind of have to. We have to be invested because these are most of their young guys right there.
Mm-hmm. Does the one game excellent shooting from Gabe Vincent make Duncan Robinson expendable, Sean?
I'm sending Duncan, Tyler, and a second out. I would think that's enough to get Dame Lillard. Maybe we have to throw in, I don't know, sign and trade Kelly Olynyk, or he's not here anymore. Belly, he signed overseas. We'll figure out a way to get it done. If Gabe Vincent's going to shoot like that, you know, put his jersey in the Raptors.
Yeah, you got to make sure to keep Vincent in that deal set, because you know Dame wants to come play with him.
The backcourt of Damian Lillard and Gabe Vincent will rip the league to shreds. There's no chance for any other team in the league. So keeping on Team USA, we have a representative, right? We have Bam Adebayo. He's playing point guard in some possessions, and he's bringing the ball up the floor. But Team USA looks disjointed and out of sorts. So, of course, Bam at some points looks disjointed and out of sorts. What's kind of been your opinion on watching him play, Alex? What have you thought about Bam?
I mean, Bam is just a perfect vessel to kind of optimize the rest of the guys on that team. I know they've had a couple of tough losses here and there. It's pretty embarrassing, and it made me laugh a little bit. Just, you know, I loved watching Nigeria beat Team USA there. It was fun watching Precious kind of. Precious and Gabe Vincent and KZ kind of embarrass these guys on a national stage just as a Heat fan. And just because I don't think it really matters. I still think Team USA, I mean, it's not that I know a lot about these other teams. I just still would imagine they have the talent to win the gold. And I still think they themselves think that. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. As far as from Bam, it's just like the things he's already good at. You know, I think a lot of these guys are going to start to understand his value just from playing with him in all these games. And that's why I love that he's there, just because I think he's such an ideal teammate for whatever type of star you have, right? And this team is obviously filled with a lot of them. So, you know, him being out there and kind of assisting guys from the high post, like we saw today, that slick pass that he had to Dame Lillard with a timely cut, where like he's hitting guys and pretty tight windows, man. Like, those are not easy passes to make, especially, you know, you're in the Olympics. Guys are playing their asses off, right? Even though it hasn't necessarily started yet. I'm just impressed with Bam and the things he does as another athletic freak here. I feel like I've already said that a couple times. And he is there to optimize the likes of Dame Lillard, Beal, Tatum, Kevin Durant. He's there to make their jobs easier. I'm not expecting a whole lot of scoring from him. But you have seen a couple of highlights there, like when he had that one where he kind of just walked right into the jump shot, got it right in his spot. There was no hesitation. He hit with that little jab step right before it. It was beautiful. When Bam has that confidence and he's hitting that little jab, it's like, oh, man, there's the cheat code. You can do the cheat code stuff on offense, man. Other bigs cannot hit a hezzy and hit the jumper off the glass as smooth as you, man. Nobody can. And so – him doing that stuff is like, yes, he's starting to, you know, we're going through that progression.
And that's why I hate the idea. I don't hate the idea. I really don't want him to work on his 3-point shot. I want him to get better at the things that he's really good at right now and just become elite. Like, just be this elite offensive option that our team has, whether he's bringing the ball up, whether we give it to him in the post, whether he's driving baseline. I just want him to have more moves in that mid-range to get to the basket consistently, and then tie that in with that jab step jumper when he's feeling that confidence, man.
And now you're going to have other guys encouraging him there on Team USA, who, you know, he's already had Jimmy on his back and other guys from the Heat. But now he's just, again, a bunch of superstars kind of encouraging him to take those shots when it's there for him. So I think it's only good stuff for him.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And, you know, you have a great guy, Draymond Green, to learn from with that playmaking aspect of it. I mean, when he comes in, he does kind of the same thing, setting up guys. And Bam's so much more talented offensively, even at this stage. And we know he has so much room to grow. The thing I saw in tonight's game, the third game against Argentina, was Bam running out, using athleticism to get ahead of the play. And in Miami, you don't see that, because ultimately, if Bam doesn't crash the glass and get the rebound, we're so poor, so small rebounding, we don't get rebounds, and then that's its own problem. In this case, we have other guys that can rebound. He's sprinting ahead, and you have a guard that can throw the ball. Damian Lillard hit him a couple of times ahead of the play. And how many bigs can run with Bam Adebayo? Not many at all. I mean, there's a very small list of that. So while I love the point Bam, it's also great to see him get out and run, you know, rim run, beat the guy down the floor, especially when he switches so much, he's almost got a head start. And even if it's a guard that gets back with him, now you have a mismatch in the post where he can just bury him under the rim. And it's just great to see. It's really great to see Bam shine. And, you know, it's only going to grow from here, I think, over the next couple of weeks.
So Alex says he thinks USA is taking gold, okay? Even though we've seen some games where the balls stick into their hand. Yeah?
I don't know shit. You know, I'm just saying that just because they seem they're the most talented team. They should win gold. You know, maybe they won't. But yeah, I mean, it's not a serious prediction, man. I don't know about these other teams like that.
I didn't mean to phrase it like it was, because I, like, honestly, watching this team play basketball has been super annoying to me. They're, like I said, the ball sticks through for sure. They do. It's just like, honest to God, if we just move the damn basketball, we'd generate better buckets. But it's like we're playing baseball from last year before, when they were keeping substances in their gloves. The ball's just sticking. It's sticking to everybody's hands. And like, so freaking weird. I saw some better ball movement today. Pop on a hot seat. Yeah. Get a question about this. One of the greatest coaches of all time, if not the greatest coach of all time, on the hot seat. Gentlemen, please.
I mean, Spo's right there, man.
Right there.
You heard it here first. If they would have lost today, went 0-3, Pop was gone. They were going to replace him with an interim coach. You know, see how it works out.
Did we just scoop deuces?
Like, everybody's, sorry, Dose.
Everybody's scoop deuces, all right?
All right, Dose. I'm sorry, man. You're out on this one, buddy. I'll take my payment in NFTs, please.
Yeah, but I mean, the ball movement, the ISO play, that's NBA play. And in FIBA rules, because you have no defensive three in the key, they just camp out. They literally are building a wall and waiting for you. And if you never move the ball side to side, if they never pass the ball, it's trouble. And, you know, Tony,
it's such a big difference.
It's incredible. It's almost like it's a different game.
It literally, the D is just like, it knows what to do every time. I mean, you don't have to plant somebody in there, but you can. It's just like, okay, if we're outmatched athletically and you're worried about guys getting to the cup over and over, pretty easy adjustment right there. Just have somebody camp in the paint. I mean, it's dangerous because there's so many shooters on Team USA too, but I think we underestimate how much of a game changer.
But doesn't that make it so much more frustrating when Beal is just like for three quarters putting his head down and driving at the rim? Like, I could not understand what the hell that was about.
He needs to shoot the ball.
He needs to shoot the damn ball.
And the other thing that you can do, because you can grab the ball off the rim, plant a guy down there, lock up the paint, and if you miss it off rim, you can jump up and goaltend the damn
thing. Hell yeah.
And you're off the races. Like, it's such a wild game, especially if you don't know the rules. You always hear people reacting like, whoa, what's going on? You know, it's crazy.
Well, FIBA basketball and the NBA finals have one thing in common, okay? And it's chaos. And that chaos in the NBA finals was created by Scott Foster. All right, Sean's favorite referee. So we're going to cut into the NBA. We're going to talk some Suns Bucks real quick. Just generally, did you even see the Bucks being able to pull off a game in this series? Because I know we're all pretty high on the Suns. Alex, when you saw this kind of like almost a blowout, really, and it was close until it wasn't. What were you thinking? How are you seeing the game?
I mean, I expected the Bucks to take game three. I still picked the Suns to win the series. I still think they're going to do that. I just think the Bucks have turned this into a series. I don't think it's done. It felt kind of done after game two. I'm not going to lie to you. But even though, like, I had expectations for Milwaukee to come home and win a couple games, it feels now that there's some palpable things that have changed. Not that I'm going to pick the Bucks to win, but I'm happy because, you know, I think, like, I want to see this matchup really play out and go to, you know, as an NBA fan, you want to see it go to game seven. And you want to see close game, you know, a close game in every game. So that's just kind of what I'm rooting for now. I'm glad the Bucks got game three, even though I'm rooting for the Suns. So I'm kind of at the point, I wanted to win game four. I want this to really be a series, and I want to see what happens if the Bucks, you know, win game four. All the pressure is on Paul and Booker, who've had so much, like, incredible publicity, and everybody's kind of on their side, where now it's like, okay, the pressure's back on you. And I'm excited for those types of moments because I think Paul and Booker are the two types of shot creators that can really step up. And to me, it's like that Bucks size advantage. They finally found a way to actually make use of it and how to actually grind the Suns down in this series, where it's like it's a tough call because the Bucks have this size that is a little bit questionable when it comes to Lopez and Portis and how far back you're going to drop them. Lopez has been used a little bit more up at times, but it's just the matchup stuff is fun to watch play out. I'm still picking the Suns, but I wouldn't be that surprised if the Bucks found a way to win.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think I've thought Suns and six, and I still think Suns and six, or maybe if it goes seven, and I would be happy with that too, just because we know after that point, we're only going to get Summer League, Olympic basketball, and then we have that gap with no basketball. So it's a great basketball series. It's cool to see the contrasting styles. You know, the Bucks are going to dominate the paint with their size. The Suns are going to live in the mid-range from behind the arc. And in the first two games, you saw the Suns exploit that. And it's ultimately shots Bucks. The Bucks want to give them up. They want to give up mid-range. They want to give up threes. And the Suns
aren't getting to the line at all.
Yeah, it's a cool X and O's series. It doesn't have the star power necessarily of like a LeBron or a Curry, you know, Durant. But at the same time, I think if you're a pure basketball fan just trying to watch execution, it's really great to watch.
Even though Bud adjusts slow, he does adjust this year. And getting the ball in the year.
It's not even close, I think.
Oh, and dear God, if they give him a lifetime contract, I'll never be dear happier. God,
did you do it on purpose?
Yo, that's the name of the episode right there, dear God.
Oh, that's great. Dang. Yes, I did it on purpose. If they give him a lifetime contract, I'll celebrate in the streets with my shirt off, waving around my head like a helicopter, all right? Shout outs. But he getting the ball into Chris and Drew's hands earlier in the shot clock and more often, allowing them to find a rhythm,
get like running plays for them early in the game. It you can't just expect your guy. Why not? You're calling on in game two, you're calling on Drew and Chris to perform, right? And everyone's criticizing the hell out of them, not realizing that most of the time that the ball touched their hands, it's late in the shot clock. It's in the second half. They just drove Giannis at the basket for two quarters. Like, of course, they're not going to have a rhythm and hit shots. So one of the big shifts is just that Drew and Chris are hitting three pointers, right? Like, but why are they doing that? Because they have a rhythm, because they have plays being ran for them. So I think if that's the mentality, we have a series. I'm just interested to see how the Suns adjust to the adjustment, because I really do think they're more talented. But they're also, here's another thing too. Soon as Ayton is in foul trouble, this team is so vulnerable. This Suns team is extremely vulnerable the second Ayton gets into foul trouble. They do not have the depth. Might as well be invisible. Yeah, they were serious. Serious. He's unplayable.
Yeah, he is he is so bad. He's literally, it's like you got 4-on-5 on there, especially on defense. Like Kaminsky is just a complete non-factor, should not be in the NBA playing any type of NBA finals minutes that aren't, you know, blowout minutes, essentially. So that Saric blow, it's kind of coming back to bite them, I think, right now.
I tweeted at the time when Saric got injured that, like, oh man, this is gonna be a swing, like this is gonna really matter. And then it didn't, right? That game specifically, it was fine. They were good. They looked really great. And I fiddled with deleting it for a hot second. I'm like, no, I'm going to leave it just in case something switches later. So I'm going to retweet that later. But yeah, that Saric injury really hurt them.
I think what might turn the series is Scott Foster is probably going to work one more game. If Scott Foster works game 5 in Milwaukee, that could turn it right there. If he's in game 6 or game 7, you imagine Scott Foster working game 7 of a Chris Paul's NBA Finals. With that history,
if we're looking at three games and we're trying to plot out this series a little bit, if the Bucks win, who's your MVP?
I mean, Giannis, for real?
Yeah, hands down.
This is not even close. Like, I have respect for Middleton and Drew Holiday, but this is not even close. Giannis has played on another level this finals. He's absolutely stepped up and has tapped into that versatility of his game where it's like, he's dominating in a bunch of different ways, and they've utilized him in different ways on both ends of the floor. And I just think you've seen the best of him more than not. And look, you got to give him credit. Like, even though everybody kind of thinks, and me, I'm on the same page here, that if Brooklyn was healthy, Brooklyn would have taken that series. You got to give credit where credit is due. Giannis stepped up. You know, we know the holes in his game. Everybody knows him. He's still one of the top 5 players in the league. You could say 3, you could say 2, however you want to feel about Giannis. I think he's that dominant on both ends of the floor. He's, you know, very Shaq-like when it comes to his paint dominance, right? And speaking of, you know, Shaq-like, he's finally using the quick, like, hooks and stuff when they get I'm like, where has that been? Like, you got this 7-foot, you know, again, athletic freak, you know, and you weren't really utilizing him in such simple ways. They've thrown all the different ways for him to, I don't know, like get his own bucket that doesn't include just having him at the top of the key, whether it's as a screener or not. He's getting to it and he's dominating, right? They've only won one game, but if they do happen to take this home, I would be shocked if there's anybody else but Giannis holding that finals MVP.
And really quick, is the worst play in playoff basketball the one where Giannis post, it doesn't work out, so he pulls the ball out to the 3-point line just to run at the rim as hard as humanly possible?
No, there's
one. I hate watching
you
that.
Get a foul call. You can get a foul call just off his physicality. No, it's definitely not.
It's a 50-50 though. Like, he's literally just saying, ah, fuck it.
He's like, yeah, well, nobody else is cutting or moving. The shot clock is winding down. I don't trust my bag. What do? You gotta go get that, you know.
It's not that it doesn't work. It's very effective, right? Like, it's super effective. I just hate, like, physically watching it. It makes me sick. Aesthetically,
like, not that pleasing to watch. Just like his own version of what Harden does, where it's like, okay, when all else doesn't fail, I'm just going to, you know, go to my bag here and try to either draw a foul or just make something happen.
By far the worst play is when he fires up a 3. When he brings it back out or catches it.
Actually,
that's the worst play.
That's the worst.
Great point. I rest my case.
Also aesthetically terrible to watch. Nobody wants to see him wind up that terrible-looking 3. Nobody believes it's going in.
No, not a chance. You know, if this series goes seven, it probably won't happen with having a loser win the finals MVP, but you can make a case. If it gets to seven, Giannis keeps playing like this, 40-point games after, you know, one after the other, his play has been tremendous. I mean, he's right now the best player in the series. And if the Suns win, it's going to go to CP3 or it's going to go to Devin Booker. But
pick, Giannis pick, has proven pick
a lot.
Who do you think? Who do you think it goes to, CP3 or Devin Booker?
I mean, obviously, just basing it on what we've seen after three games,
yep.
I would say CP3. And I think the legacy thing also is going to be when you have these things where they're voting, they're going to give it to him over Booker just because of the age and legacy type of situation. So I don't know. Alex, what do you think?
It's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. Like, I do think, it's fair to say Giannis has been the best player in the series, definitely the most dominant. I would probably edge and give it towards Chris Paul. I don't think everything has to be black and white. I feel like a lot of the stuff on Twitter when it comes to Suns talk is like, you're either on the side of, they've played injured teams. You know, it's Chris Paul is the one that made all the difference, or you're on the side of, no, these guys were already an upstart team and it's not all Chris Paul. Chris Paul is just a great player who's helping them out. I'm more in the middle there. I still think Chris Paul is going to deserve Finals MVP just because of all the stuff he initiates on offense, all the times that he bails them out. And not that Devin Booker doesn't, Devin Booker, to be fair, is, just gotten so much better over the past few years, and he's doing it at the highest stage, the biggest stages. I know he's been a little bit up and down with his shooting. I would edge it out with Chris Paul just because of the playmaking he does, the times that he bails him out. I think that he's really the leader there, along with Monty Williams, of course. I think he deserves it. I think he's kind of what makes them go. He's made all of them better. Even it was a team that you can acknowledge both things. It was a team that was an upstart team and was already coming up, and it was just great timing. You got Chris Paul there, and the stars aligned. It's kind of exactly what you wanted, especially if you're a team like the Suns who haven't won in so long. Everything worked out perfectly for them, and I think Chris Paul is the ultimate symbol for that. Chris Paul was a guy who got them, if they do win, to where they had to go. I think he deserves it.
And as I continue to sound like a grumpy old man not understanding and hating on Twitter, here's another moment where Twitter tries to make things like, Chris Paul, if he wins the award, it's just a narrative award. But like, Chris Paul literally deserves the MVP award. He's not just getting it gifted to him. He makes that offense open.
Him and Booker both have a case for it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, another episode done, completed, wrapped. I mean, I can't believe we made it through this one. I mean, we were basically at each other's throats the whole time, but we managed. Alex, dude, thank you for being here. Appreciate you coming on the pod and being with us. Tell everybody where they can find your stuff, man.
I guess on Twitter, you can find me at Tropical Blanket. Don't ask why. And check out Five on the Floor on Five Reasons Sports Network. It's with me, with Ethan Skolnick, and my guy, Leif, not Greg Sylvander, Leif. And yeah, that's where you can check me out if you would like to. I don't know why you would want to, though.
And Locked on Heat.
Yeah, I think I've made one appearance there in my entire life, but the bit stands.
Oh, good. All right. I'm glad I have more reoccurring appearances than you. Other people are beating me and it's pissing me off. Shout out Saver Ramil. Guys, thank you so much for being with us. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, then unsubscribe and resubscribe again. All of those subscription numbers count. We love it. They add to our download counts, and we thank you.